TalkZone.com.
A streak of fire, a breath of flame, eluding all who reach and clutch. A gray ghost thrown into the game that rival hands may never touch. A rubber-bounding, blasting soul whose destination is the goal, Red Grange of Illinois by Grantland Rice. For many of us, names like Butkus, Nitschke, and Grange are more than mere players on a field. They represent the history, the glory, and the spirit of a university that has contributed so much to this country and has made our lives rich beyond anything we may offer in return. If Virginia belongs to Jefferson, then surely the land-grant legislation proposed and signed by Abraham Lincoln in 1865 gave birth to his home state university in 1867 and countless other institutions for the people, of the people, and by the people. We are the living legacy of Father Abraham's great institution. Sons and daughters of Illinois, our renaissance, in the words of Ron Gunther, is now. From Chicago, the greatest sports city in America, we are proud to bring you Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G.
Happy New Year, Illini Nation. Boz and Mr. G welcoming you to the first show of 2010 of Talking Illini here at the studios, TalkZone.com. in beautiful Morton Grove, Illinois. And before we get rocking and rolling here, the fun's only started. The conference season's going to be really kicked off in full bore now. But I want to, you know, let's thank our sponsors for making this possible. And then we'll get into our hoops team. Two overtime thrillers, if you will, last week. Brian Barnhart's going to join us at about 4:20 or so. So, Joe Rizzo Cars, Joe Rizzo Auto Dealerships, thank you very much for your, continued support. And where do the fans find, Joe Rizzo, Mr. G?
He's got 14 dealerships, but you can find him at joerizzocars.com.
And also, our friends at Alpac Athletic Clubs, they've got four facilities.
Lincoln Park, Lakeview, Evanston, and the West Loop.
And our third major sponsor, Wildfire Steaks, Chops, and Seafood. Wildfire.com, I believe they have a website with all their sites, including for our fans in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and somewhere in the Atlanta area, as well as the Alexandria, Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, as well as about six locations in Chicago. Downtown, Schaumburg, Lincolnshire, Glenview, and I know I'm missing one, but regardless, thank you very much, sponsors. It's we're very grateful, Mr. G and I, for your support, so we can.
By the way,
if
you're interested in sponsoring our show, call us at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com
or on our website. TalkingIllini.com. There's a spot to click and see what the rates are. It's not too expensive, and get a hold of us. We'd love to have you. And on that note, you've got some exciting news coming in February. We're hitting the road.
We are going to do a remote show. We're finalizing the details.
Big
at
time.
Joe's Bar on Weed. We're going to finalize those details again. That's on the near north side of Chicago. And that would be from 4 to 6 on Tuesday, February 23rd. We're working out the details on that, but we'll give out some free Talking Illini T-shirts. I'll buy beers for a couple of the guys. We'll do trivia contests.
Just a couple?
Well,
Boz
will buy them for the rest. And then we're going to have just a great time, a fun time. You get to throw tomatoes at us if you wish. And get to meet us in person. And
is Coach Gunther going to come throw tomatoes?
I don't think that Coach Gunther will be there. I have this letter framed on my wall from Coach Gunther thanking me for coming up with the idea for the four players that were up 30 feet high at Memorial Stadium before the renovation. That was Grange, Butkus,
Long Hallis, ago.
And J.C. Caroline.
Gunther coming out and thanking me for all I've done for the Illinois program
and
basketball,
so
football.
Away.
I don't think I'm going to be getting any of those letters from Gunther anymore.
The 23rd fans, we've got a ball game on TV. It's at Michigan that starts right at 6. So the reason we're there is to do the show, do some pregame, and then we'll all, you know, watch the game together.
Maybe during the game we'll do some contest as well during commercial timeouts.
I thought you were going to say maybe we'll play, what's that little game where you shoot baskets?
Pop a shot,
yeah.
Buzz. That little game. What century were you born in?
I don't know, whatever, 1956.
I want to give a shout-out to Jeff Frank, my favorite electric orange Kool-Aid drinking Illini poster of all time.
Electric orange?
Electric. What, I mean, because Kool-Aid drinking isn't enough. It's electric orange
it's
Kool-Aid
drinking. Electric Kool-Aid drinker?
Yeah. Jeff's world is a better place where everyone is hopeful and brimming with confidence. I truly wish that I could inhabit Jeff's world where everything orange is always beautiful and victory and glory is always just outside our grasp. Jeff, sincerely, keep seeking beauty and victory as we continue to inhabit our dark and formless world of defeatism. But when it comes to race and sports, there are no excuses for Illinois not leading the charge. We are the university that was created by Lincoln's pen. And while I'm not alleging racism, passivity on neutrality on this issue will not suffice. Hire the best candidates, regardless of color, but make the process transparent and seek out men and women who are qualified and of color. Sunlight is the best disinfectant, and the cloak and dagger world inhabited by our athletic dictator does not inspire confidence or promote a sense of fairness in light of legitimate questions regarding our history of hiring in basketball and football.
Thank you, Sean Hannity. That's what Jeff called you, right?
I think, you know, do I look like Sean Hannity? Do I sound like Sean Hannity?
No, not at all. But thank you, Jeff, for listening and caring. And read what Jeff wrote. He complimented us on our two-hour weekly extravaganza.
I will. But
made me feel good.
Actually, people have told me that I look a little like Alec Baldwin.
Forget about it.
No, that's what I'm telling
you. Carmody's, you know, got the hairstyle.
Hannity.
No, Bill Carmody, Northwestern.
And the open
Hannity. I know Carmody. Hannity.
Here's what Jeff said. By the way, I do love their show, and they deserve more listeners, not because of him trying to act like Sean Hannity, but because it is 2 hours of pure Illini talk with good guests. Actually, I'd say great guests. It means we never have to listen to the score again, although it means I'm listening to less music. Thank you, Jeff Frank, and thank you for your optimism.
Yeah, it's only 2 hours less music. You got a whole week to listen to music. We listen to music other times, don't we?
Yes, we do, Buzz. We are music listeners.
I got to thank Mr. G for coming up with the seats Saturday for the Gonzaga game at the
Gonzaga.
UC. Well, I was 14th row center, was like sitting in my living room. It was great fun time, great game. Had the family, the wife and kids, one son, one daughter, all dressed in orange.
Would you rather sit on the floor in the corner or in the third row center court? Or where were you?
No,
we were in the 8th row. You were in the 14th row center court.
Mine were perfect. Any lower is too low. There is such that you think that is too low, or if you're going to theater, live theater downtown or in Broadway. You know, one time my uncle got me seats to a Broadway show. I was in the first row. I hated it.
His uncle being Mr. C, of course. He only works with misters of single initials.
Yeah, Mr. C and Mr. G. But
from Happy Days.
This particular, I think it was Hairspray several years ago. We were visiting and took the kids. And, you know, I'm right next to the orchestra pit. And I'm looking, you're kind of looking up at the stage. Now, it's a show with women in dresses, it's a little different. But sometimes there is such a thing as too close. And those people that paid a big money for the Bulls games or whatever to sit on the floor, you know, once or twice a year maybe, but not every night. You can't, the 10th row, 14th, 15th row center is the perfect perspective.
I think they pay that extra money so people can see them on
TV. Yeah, and they got the money, so good for them.
No, I will be at the Duke-Iowa State game in Mr. Reinsdorf's box tomorrow night. I feel a little bit dirty about going to see Duke play, but I am going to see them play.
Are you
going to
have your Welcome Home John t-shirt on?
You know, I hold no malice. I hold no ill feelings towards John.
I didn't ask you what you're holding.
He was brainwashed by his father. He never had a chance to go to Illinois, even though he wanted to come to Illinois. His father would have never let him go there.
Well, I don't know. I think well, let's move on. I don't want to make this the John Shire show. I mean, is that going to be a good game? Is Iowa State going to give them a game?
I got to tell you something. Iowa State, the coach McDermott, yeah. How he let his son go to Northern Iowa. His son looked like the best player on the court against Jeremy Richmond and playing with that other kid who's going to North Carolina.
Well, that's because he had a 6'2 guy from Waukegan guarding him.
I don't care.
6'8.
That guy had great court sense and great basketball IQ. I don't know why his father let him get out of town.
Well, obviously, same reason we let, what's his name, go to Purdue, the trainer's son.
Brian Cardinal.
Yes.
Boz is working on shorthanded brain cells here.
Well, you know, it happens at my age. You knew what I was talking about.
I did, which is equally frightening, by the way.
So, Mr. G, we should have got Meredith back to give us firsthand. She was saying she was going to the Northwestern game. Let's talk about that first. I got plenty. See my notes here on this little scribbled paper? I was all but ready.
He looks like Mr. Green Jeans. He's got notes coming out of his jacket.
What's his name?
Ray Rayner.
Yeah, with the stickum on the shirt. You know,
right.
He had the Post-its before Post-its were created. He used it with safety pins, I think. But I was all but ready to bury Keller after the Northwestern game. I mean, let's face it. He came in and once he got a pass, no one else saw the ball. And he was throwing up his junk, and it wasn't going in. And he they took him out, rightfully so, and didn't put him back in. He only played 7 minutes. And I thought, my goodness, here it's the first conference game of the year, and our bench just keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking.
By the way, who says my goodness?
I just did.
I mean, my grandmother says it. Oh, my goodness, Billy Bob, that was a horrible thing you just did.
Well, what do you want me to say?
Don't cuss in public.
God damn, our bench is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking because we're getting nothing, absolutely nothing out of Keller, the Northwestern game.
Okay, so then you were okay with Keller in the...
Well, then he, to his credit, you know, although he did look like he was sulking on the bench that night after he got taken out and didn't get put back in, I found it interesting in the pregame I was observing at the United Center prior to the Gonzaga game that he looked energized, he looked into it, he looked trying to get the guys involved, and I was thinking, wow, you know, this is interesting. I don't know quite what to make of it, but you know, lo and behold, he kept us in the game. And how, what's the right word? Is you know how
he kept Gonzaga in the game too when he was playing defense. Hey,
well,
by the way, we may have the worst post defensive players I've ever seen.
Well,
in my
it's not their fault. They're too their base is too weak and
Keller
skinny.
Keller is
and
not
fit.
A skinny guy.
All right, poor Tisdale.
Tisdale
and Davis.
Poor guys, Davis.
I mean. Number, what was his name? Elias or Harris? One of the two. Harris for Gonzaga. He looked like Elgin Baylor going against Davis, just powering in there.
By the way, is it any wonder that Jamal Cornerly owned us for 3 years? I mean, the guy was about 6'6", 250. We had, you know, basically we looked like dental floss next to him.
Well, this leads to the point, a major question. We can open it up to the listeners, 888-463-6748, or email
us. You think Jeff Frank will call
us? TalkingIllini@yahoo.com.
Jeff, come on. We want you on the show here. 888-463-6748.
But since, you know, I've been thinking about this now, and also since it's kind of reported that Jeff Jordan might start tonight, I don't know if it's definitive, but Lindsey Wilhite, I'll read what he wrote this morning. I'm not sure, you know, basically it says The Illini are surrendering points in an unprecedented rate under Bruce Weber. Worse yet, they seem to fall behind by double figures early each game. Weber's apparent solution, question mark, granting junior walk-on guard Jeff Jordan his first career start in place of freshman DJ Richardson. Now, I don't know if that's Lindsay speculating or Weber actually said that, but it's funny because some of our fans...
Did he say apparently or he was doing it definitively?
No, Lindsay, it says here, do you listen to me?
I was trying.
It says Weber's apparent solution, granting Jeff Jordan the start. But, you know, with this in mind.
So what does that mean, apparent solution? Does that mean that that's Weber's solution or
maybe
apparently that's what he's going to be doing?
Well, you know, Weber also alluded to after the game in the heat of the frenzy on the post game as I was driving home Saturday. You know, he said, I get, you know, maybe I'll have to make some changes to the starting lineup because we start so badly.
Is Bruce developing anger management issues? Did
well,
you see him whip the
clipboard
down?
Well,
and
that's
also
interesting.
Also, the faces he's making, he's contorting himself, I'm afraid.
So we're going to ask Brian. I got a question for Brian about this because he sits right there next to him. But, yeah, you know, I mean, he was really, really upset Saturday.
Is he
going to
lace into a Bobby Knight type rant where he goes off in practice
no,
and somebody's got a recorder?
He refrains himself and just kind of clenches and you know, makes that face not to
I'm
talk.
I'm afraid that he's going to bust a vessel
right,
or something.
Right, his head's just going to fly off of his shoulders.
Like in that movie, what was that, Scanners, where the head explodes in Scanners.
But, so Jeff Jordan might start today, and, oh, I was supposed to make a comment on your movie reference?
Whatever. I'm done trying.
Okay. Extraordinary Measures, January 22nd, coming out soon with Harrison Ford. Go see it. My cousin's the executive producer on that.
This is Tom's daughter.
Our friend Bill.
Tom's daughter.
Yes.
What's her name?
Amy. Amy Bear. My cousin.
Tom Bosley's daughter is going to be producing this movie with Harrison Ford.
She is president of CBS Films, which is a newly formed company, just a couple years old, and this is their first full length feature coming out. Is that Jeff Frank calling you now, Mr. G? But our friend Bill wrote to me during the week, do you see any lineup changes? What about more playing time for Tyler Griffey? And we have a new, an old listener, but a new writer and participant, Brian from Orland Park. And we'll read this before we go to break and get Brian Barnhart on, and then we'll have a lot to talk about the rest of the show. But Brian writes, Bruce continues to lament the turnovers, but hasn't changed his rotation at all. At what point does he shake things up? Specifically, Brandon Paul's a wonderful talent, but his shot selection is terrible, 39% from the field. And Richardson isn't much better, 42%. Worse, they both get more shots per game than Tisdale, a 62% shooter. Meanwhile, McCamey's a turnover machine, and their perimeter defense has been very poor, particularly at the start of game. So here's the question. How much longer can they go without inserting Jeff Jordan into the starting lineup? It seems like a theme this week, which you must be like, you know, you having a party tonight for the game?
Why? Because
giving out number 13 jerseys?
Because I said Jeff Jordan would be an integral part of this team?
By the end of the show, you'll be very happy because I want to be invited to your party that I'm starting to come around on Jeff Jordan. Just starting to. Jordan cuts down on turnovers, 0.086 per minute versus 0.1. What do you think Brian does for a living? Versus 0.116
maybe nothing.
Per minute for McCamey, over 40% better. Way too many numbers. He's a CPA. Gets other guys involved, shoots about a third as often as the other guys, and plays tough defense. He was the reason they got back in the game Saturday. Why not start Jeff Jordan, move McCamey to the wing? If I would have thought more, it would have been you sending him this email.
Well, because McCamey is not a point guard.
Off the bench, or perhaps bring both off the bench and start Cole or Keller. As importantly, Jordan is the leader the team lacks. Bruce spent a good portion of the preseason wondering who was going to lead the team, and at this point of the season, the answer is obvious. Jordan and Keller are the only two guys with fire in their belly. Is it any coincidence they start every game slowly?
Wait a second.
Doesn't
Billy Cole have a fire in his belly, too?
Only when the coals are lit.
Yeah.
I love Bruce, but this team is underachieving now. McCamey's turnovers, Paul's shot selection are killing the season. Talent is only worthwhile if it produces results. Bruce needs to address these two problems now. That's Brian in Orland Park. Some great points, a common theme. And, you know, I guess tonight, I don't know what it'll prove, because you and I could probably play point guard against Iowa, and we would.
You know what? That is terrible karma on your part. I can't believe that a seasoned fan of your rooting acumen could ever make a comment like that. Do you really want to test the basketball gods by just going right at them and saying this is not a worthy opponent?
You know, if that's what you interpret my comment.
I'm sorry. I need a deep breath right now. We're going to take a brief break, and then we'll be back with Brian Barnhart. Thank you.
You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans are available online 24/7. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle, compare up to 5 vehicles at once, access new vehicle reviews, take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing. Why drive from dealer to dealer? Just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzaCars.com.
Hey, Illini fans. Looking to win in the game of real estate? There's never been a better time to buy a new home. Interest rates are low, there are plenty of homes to choose from, and ultimately real estate is a great investment. Greg Fisher of Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is experienced, professional, and dedicated. As your realtor, Greg can help you find the perfect new home. Contact Greg today at 847-681-4173 or learn more at gregshouses.com. Buy or sell with the man who knows his X's and O's. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT LLC.
Step back in time when going out for dinner meant something really special. Step into Wildfire, a steak and chop house with the aura of a 1940s dinner club. Private and semi-private rooms offer a variety of options for any social or business event. Order from our supper club menu served family style. Try our horseradish crusted filet mignon or Wildfire's delicious cedar plank salmon. Dine at any of our 8 Wildfire restaurant locations. Visit us on the web at wildfirerestaurant.com to find a location nearest you.
Across the country and around the world, this is TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio. You're talking Illini on TalkZone. Now back to Boz and Mr. G.
Boz and Mr. G back talking Illini, first show of the new year, and we got a ball game tonight against the Iowa Hawkeyes, the dreaded Iowa Hawkeyes.
Who'll be calling that ball game, Boz?
The one, the only voice of the Illini, the voice of the best five-loss team in the country, our good friend Brian Barnhart. Brian, thanks for coming on.
Hey, gentlemen, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Brian. By the way, doesn't UNC have 5 losses too now, or they just have 4 losses?
Are they up to 5? I know they lost last night.
So maybe they just have 4 losses. So maybe we are the best 5-loss team in America.
Isn't that a good way to spin things today?
That is. And, you know, another way to look at it is 4 of those 5 losses, and I'm sure you're going to be talking about a lot of this as we go along, but 4 of those 5 losses, I think the total points is like 12, 13.
Right, we're trying to keep things positive, and that's why we gave you a break during football season, because it was hard, hard to find anything positive.
You know, Brian, back in the beginning of the year, I said that this team may have a similar path to the one that was taken by the 2003-2004 team, where we actually started out 10-4, mm-hmm. with bad losses to Providence and Northwestern. People were ready to hang Bruce in effigy at that point after the Northwestern loss, where we looked like a totally discombobulated team. And then that team caught fire and really played well down the stretch, with the exception of a 20-point loss at Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know, I think there were a lot of similarities. You're exactly right. And I think they're kind of going through similar things this year. Now, that was a totally different thing, where he was brand new on the scene. A lot of the guys were still pining, if you will, for Bill Self, D. Brown, and some others, and they had not bought in yet. Right now, I don't think this team has bought into the defensive style that Bruce wants to play. whether they're capable of that, you know, we can go back and forth on that. Obviously, we struggle in the post. It's funny because on the radio show last night with Bruce, I asked him on the air, I said, have you ever in your years as an assistant at Purdue and at Southern Illinois as a head coach and now at Illinois ever seen a team struggle like this defensive? And I barely got the word out, and he goes, no, never.
Well, at Purdue, they had defensive ends clogging up the middle there, for crying out loud.
Well, that's right. And I mean, they may be eventually become good players, but right now, the good defensive players, but right now, he keeps telling me that the best defensive players he has, and think about this, are the two freshmen that actually are still learning the ropes of what to do, and they're still making mistakes, and they're still having trouble, you know, communicating in certain spots. But as far as learning principles and wanting to try at least to learn to play defense a little better, those two guys are right now, the two of the better defenders.
They still don't get their heads turned when they're playing weak side defense. You know, you can throw.
No, and you have to remember in high school, as you guys know, you guys see high school, you know, you have plenty of defense.
Yeah.
You sit in the zone, you know, the guy goes, oh, okay, whatever, I'll come down and, you know, score 25, and you don't worry about it. And, you know, the kind of defense that he, and I know Wayne McLean is big on it too, all those years at Manual, they defended like crazy. You know, if you're not going to be great defensively, at least work to get better at it. And look at a guy like Trent Meacham, who was not a very good player defensively. When he came to Illinois after transferring, and he turned out to be a decent defensive player. And, you know, Calvin Brock turned out to be a decent defensive player. So, I mean, that's what they want. And right now, you know, they're struggling to get that from the upperclassmen in particular.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that Bruce said that last night, because frankly, you know, I've been watching, you know, we're a big fan of Brandon Paul's up here, and I've seen a lot of his high school games, and I know he's got it in him, but I've been a little disappointed in his defense lately, just kind of, you know, effort sticking with his guy and everybody fighting over the picks and stuff. It just seems like there's something lacking there.
Yeah, and like I said, they want him to emphasize it, but you see these young guys, what happened to Brandon in particular was he got off with almost too much offensive success.
Right.
First couple of games, he's 22, he's got 20. Now, you know, you got these people talking, hey, is he going to leave early? Is he going to do this? You know, and all that kind of stuff. And now he's kind of, you know, the last month or so he hit that wall where he was lost, and he's starting to get it back. And I think Weber feels like in the next month or so, not that they're just going to explode all of a sudden, but he kind of sees a little bit of progress each time. And he thinks that they're going to, you know, get their second wind, you know, or here in a few weeks. Hopefully that'll be the case.
By the way, Boz and Brian, you know, we've said all this. We've had all this doom and gloom. And yet, you know, Gonzaga, which looked like an NBA team in terms of physicality, had coughed the ball up, 23 turnovers. If not for some poor shot selection in the last 5 minutes of the game, we win that game, perhaps even going away. And really, it wasn't the defense that lost that game for us as much as our shot selection down the stretch. Yes, Keller gave up some easy hoops. Yes, Davis gave up some easy hoops. Tisdale looked like dental floss out there. But really, the point that really I'm trying to make is we were in that game, controlling that game against a very, very good team, and but for a few bad decisions down the stretch, would have won that game.
Yeah, no, and you're right, because the shot selection at the end of games, we have not played well as far as, I don't know if we panicked or we just haven't executed properly. You think of the Utah game, the Bradley game, the Georgia game, this game the other day, and as you know, that starts to build a little bit in your psyche as to winning a close game like that. But you're right, and I told Bruce, you know, after the game and the day after, I said, you know, I know you lost the game, but that was an unbelievably exciting game to watch. And he kind of, you know, how coaches are, like, well, that doesn't matter. We didn't win. But I was like, and then he went to his, I guess, his sister's for a birthday party, a little gathering for her shortly after the game the other day before he came back to Champaign. And his sister was telling him the same thing. It was a great game.
It was.
Well, and it really was. I mean, it was great to watch. And from just purely from a selfish announcer standpoint, I love doing games like that.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. The Northwestern game also. You know, I mean, we've got two in a row here, and I suspect that the majority of the rest of the conference games are going to be like that also.
Well, that's the thing you don't know. I think that's what's got him worried is, you know, Purdue's not going to let you run up and down like that. You know, Michigan State's probably not. You know, they like to push it at times, but they're, you know, you're going to run into these teams that are Wisconsin, Bo Ryan. They're going to Tubby Smith. They're going to defend you and try to cut down on your your offensive flow, and that's what he's worried about is on the defensive end, if we don't improve even just a little bit, you know, we're going to be in trouble. And that's what, you know, and we've talked about this, he and I have, about if you can just even improve 25% on defense, you've got the scoring firepower, you know, to give yourself a chance to win. I mean, it's a testament to the guys that they can come from 23 down at Clemson or come from 21 down after a slow start. He's just really concerned about the slow starts, you know, that got them behind so big at Clemson and got them behind Northwestern and got them behind these other teams that they've played, and, you know, get off to a better start, and then you don't have to scramble like crazy to try to get back in the game and try to win it, and don't put yourself in that position where you have to make a last-second shot.
Brian, is there such a thing as basketball ADD? I mean, I really believe that this team just loses concentration, loses interest for long stretches of the game, and Bruce is just not used to that. The two shot selections that really, I thought, blew the game for us on Saturday's game were the Jordan and McCamey shots with about 5 minutes left in the game when we were up 8 points, and Jordan took a wild layup shot, and then McCamey fouled that when we were still up 8 with a fadeaway shot where he thought he got fouled and immediately just threw the ball up. They were both bad shots, and really I thought we had a chance to just grab the game by the horns right there.
Yeah, I think Bruce figured it out. We talked about it on the show last night that had we, instead of doing those two things that you talked about, the Jordan shot and the McCamey shot, had we just, on those two possessions, just dribbled the ball for 35 seconds and kicked it out of bounds,
we would have been better off. Yeah, we would have been much
better off and may have won the game, or they had to foul us. I mean, what we did there, we just kind of shot ourselves in the foot and gave them an opening. There was also another time, I think, when we didn't box out, and Jordan went for a rebound and scrambled on the floor, and they got a
jump ball,
and they got possession because we didn't box out. And so there's just little things like that that drive a guy like Bruce crazy. And, you know, so the slow starts, the execution in those key times that you're talking about, are things that have, you know, come back to haunt us, and that's how they kind of got themselves painted in a corner here with 5 losses.
There's been talk of maybe a lineup change because of the slow starts and possibly Jordan starting at point guard. Is that going to happen tonight, do you know?
Yeah, Jordan will definitely start. They're even thinking about starting Bill Cole. And of course, Bill has, you know, worked his way, you know, into the coach's favor with his hard work and, you know, being named a captain and hustling. And, you know, he's not the most gifted athletically player that there is, but, you know, he kind of has had that mentality that Coach Weber's looking for. So I think he's maybe looking to reward those two guys. I know Jordan definitely will be starting tonight.
In place of DJ or Brandon?
I don't know if it'll be DJ, or I'm not sure. He's thinking about the two freshmen. He doesn't want to damage their, you know, psyche as far as, you know, don't want to get them upset, but also wants to send them a message too. And so I think they were also, the coaches were a little upset even with Dimitri at the end of the last game. He's the guy that didn't box out on the ball that Jordan got tied up on, and
he also made a poor decision down the stretch. He never should have given the ball up, you know, to a guarded Paul with 4 seconds left in the game. I don't blame Paul for taking the three. I blame McCamey for giving them the ball in a bad position.
Well, and the other thing that maybe hasn't been mentioned enough in that last sequence was that on that play that they had designed, Davis is supposed to inbound the ball, and he slipped up or forgot and went the other way. So then Jordan, I think, had to come back, and then McCamey didn't exactly push it up the floor, and then Bruce saw what was happening and was ready to call a timeout, but then Brandon took the shot before he could get he had his hand on his shoulders to call timeout. The shot was taken, and the game was over. So it was kind of a thing where they had worked on a play, you know, that you could say, well, they should have, you know, rushed it in and called timeout or something, but he had tried that with Northwestern the night of the game before, and it didn't really work, so he thought they would design a play, and they'd worked on it before to, you know, the play that they were trying to run, but then Davis went the wrong way. Instead of inbounding, he went to the other end of the floor.
Well, and I'm sure, and that's part of the basketball ADD that I was talking about. Guys aren't paying attention, or they fall asleep. I'm sure, and I don't blame Bruce for this. When there were 26 seconds left in the game and Gonzaga was inbounding the ball and they were, you know, saying, okay, if they score, this is the play we're going to run. Let's not let them set up the defense, which normally is, I think, a better strategy, because I think a timeout in that situation only helps the defense. It does not necessarily help the offense. But with a team with this limited an attention span and this type of ADD and this type of immaturity, maybe in that type of situation, you have to call the timeout.
Yeah, maybe so. And you know, there's two, as you noticed, and you talked about, there's two schools of thought. I mean, some people say, you know, definitely call the timeout, let them, you know, get set. And in this case, they had a play. They had tried the Northwestern sequence before, the game before, and it hadn't worked because, you know, we didn't, Northwestern changed defenses on us or whatever. And so I think he just wanted to try to, the game was kind of a scrambled game anyway a little bit, and I think he thought that might be the way to go. But, and again, he was trying to get the timeout, but just couldn't get it in time before Brandon fired the shot.
That 20% improvement in defense, specifically, what do they need to do to you know, give less easy shots, get a few more rebounds, whatever, to get us over the hump in these close games?
Well, I think a lot of it's just, you know, desire to be better. You know, I think, you know, some guys, and a lot of guys, especially the really talented kids that come in, they're thinking, you know, I'm going to be in the pros. I need to score. And there's that kind of, and they scored a lot in high school. They scored 25, 30 points a game. And so, you know, to get them to understand that, and this is Bruce's big philosophy is, hey, if it's like the Final Four team, if we all do the things well and be great as a team, then the NBA guys are going to notice you. They're going to come knocking on your door. And I think he wants the effort is the key. And also, I guess from a specific standpoint, to be better at helping on defense, to do the little things, you know, Dominique had a great game the other day, and that was his kind of game. And he was playing to the crowd, and he had 9 rebounds. Bruce was more pleased with the 9 rebounds than he was necessarily the points.
But he was a turnstile on defense, too.
Yeah, and so, you know, you've got some guys that are, and when you're on the floor, and that's been for me the biggest difference, what I noticed early was we have 5 guys on the floor that can score. And there were times in the last couple of years where there was maybe 3 guys that could score, and the other 2 guys, you know, would be struggle to score. So, I think there's a scorer's mentality that he's trying to work to change. And I think he's already realized that they're not going to be a great defensive team, this year, but can they be, you know, better than they are now? And that's what he wants. And that's why I think he's trying to send a message to some of these guys saying, look, Jordan at least is giving me the effort on defense. He's not the most gifted guy on the court, but he at least is working hard at it. And, he's improved his shot, so he's not a total liability on offense. And the same way with Cole. I mean, he's worked his tail off.
Yeah, I see the insertion of Jordan in the lineup as kind of like getting Chester Frazier back out there. You know, as long as he, you know, doesn't turn the ball over, you know, he could get him in the offense. It starts on the defensive end. He plays good D, gets a few defensive rebounds. He could push it if he just, you know, limits his shots to, you know, the easy ones for him. By moving presumably Dimitri over to the two, we'll see something different there for the positive.
Well, and I think, you know, and you guys were talking about Jordan earlier. I mean, that was the role they were grooming him for last year. And then, he left after shortly after the team banquet, you know, and he was going to work on his studies and schoolwork and so forth. And I think with all the new guys coming in, there seemed to be a handwriting on the wall that these guys were going to play and his minutes were going to be limited. And then I think he began to miss it. And then he wanted to come back, but then Bruce wanted to gauge, how committed are you to this? I mean, we want you back, but are you going to be with us for the rest of the time you're here and not just walk away again? And so I think he was testing him there. And then, of course, he had to get back into conditioning shape because he really didn't do a lot of the conditioning stuff the team did over the summer. So that set him behind a little bit. But he is fairly quickly caught up. I don't think he's still where he needs to be totally, but I think he's given him enough minutes now and playing enough minutes that he's in pretty decent shape. And he's developed a pretty good 17, 18-foot jump shot, too.
Yeah, when you see him in pregame, just remind him not to pick up his dribble like 2 feet over the center line when he gets over there. He does that a little too much. That kind of gets me a little nervous in my easy boy chair there.
Brian, were you cringing with about 2 minutes left in the game, 2.5 minutes left in the game, when we were clinging to a 3-point lead against the Zags, and Bruce decided to go zone out of a timeout, and Bolden hit that 3. It's just like that car crash that you see coming that you can't do anything about.
Yeah, well, he hates zones. You guys know that. I mean, it's against every fiber of his being. he has thrown it in every once in a while, and it worked in the Clemson game because it was a good speed bump, I thought. You know, just to change, to give Clemson a look that they hadn't seen much of. But again, I think it was a case of he was trying to, it was a little of a gamble on his part because the rating is so bad up inside And he told the guys, do not let 15 shoot it. Do not let, well, something broke down in the zone, and I don't know if it was, I think Dimitri was supposed to be out there, I think, on that.
He was the one legitimate three-point shooting threat that we had.
And that was the guy that took the shot, obviously, and probably being a future NBA player, Bolden, but some people think. But, I mean, it was one of those things that it was a gamble on his part, but if they miss it and we get the rebound, then, you know, we're up by three with the ball and it might be a different outcome. But it's kind of a roll of the dice on his part, you know, and yet, you know, there are times when people say, well, why don't we go zone? And then we do, and that happens. And other times, you know, if you do go to a zone and it doesn't work, then why did you go to the zone? So he's kind of, it was a bit of a gamble on his part and a gamble he got burned with in that particular case.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak for Mr. G here, but, you know, I didn't mind it for the changeup, although maybe the time it was the first time all day and it was the end of the game. But, you know, I firmly believe you got to do it, and it's just the fact that the kids aren't used to it. They maybe don't play and practice it enough. But, you know, I think you have to have it in your arsenal. And ironically, I was watching some of the Proviso West 30, and I saw Bruce's brother use it, which I hadn't seen him use it too often either.
Yeah, and they've actually been zoning a little more on out of bounds plays because they were getting burned so bad.
Yeah, that's
early
another
in the year on inbounds plays. So they actually zoned a little more. They've actually zoned more this year than they have in any of the you know, this is the seventh year he's been here that I've seen, especially on the out of bounds plays. You'll see it.
But what have we always been taught since we're little kids, that if you can't play solid man to man principles and defense, you're not going to be able to play a good zone defense. And this team does not play solidly man-to-man, and there's no reasonable expectation that they're going to do any better playing zone defense.
Yeah, and I guess that I think Bruce thinks considers it, and this is his opinion on it, that if you say, okay, say, why don't we just, because my thinking is at times, okay, why don't we just play zone and just forget it? But in his thinking, it is, as a coach, he's like, well, that means I'm giving in. Basically, the players have won. They don't want to learn to play defense, or they're not giving the effort I need. So you guys win, play zone. And he doesn't want to do that. And he wants them to get better, whether it pays off this year or next year. He wants them to get better at defense, and he's not willing to give that up yet.
Are you a little nervous about tonight?
Not too much. I guess, you know, Gatens is a really good shooter. He can shoot it from anywhere on the floor. Cole is a big guy, and I don't mean tall. I mean wide. And he gave us some problems last year.
Yeah, by the way, squat, solid, low court, you know, front court players give us problems. We're not very good. Jamal Cornerly made an absolute career out of playing us.
Yeah, and Cole got us for 10 last year. And remember, last year's game was pretty close most of the way. We pulled it out finally in the end by 6 or 8, I think. But, I'm more interested to see what the message is as these, you know, if both of these guys start, how the message is received, how they feed off of that. I mean, Iowa hung with Purdue for a half or more, but they're missing so many players, and, you know, they've got some young players that I think are going to be pretty good eventually, but they're kind of a wounded animal right now. But I'm more worried about the Indiana, you know, I guess maybe I should be worried about the Iowa game. Personally, I'm not too much. I'm more worried about the Indiana game Saturday night because you know, they really get up for us. They don't like us very much over there. and they're liable to, you know, and they can give us a hard game even when we're really good. So I'm just hoping they get a confidence boost tonight. You know, the guys that need to get a message, get the message sent or receive it, and then they play well tonight and build on that for Saturday. Because if you look at it, guys, down the road, the schedule, you know, after these two games here, you've got Penn State at home, and that's not a gimme. You know, we're at Northwestern eventually coming up. You've got a game with Michigan State, I think, coming up, and a game with Purdue on the horizon. So, I mean, you can't afford too many slip-ups, or you're going to be, you know, looking at the NIT if you're not careful.
Right. I was going to ask you, I mean, to get to that magic number of 20, we need to go 11-6 the rest of the way. And, do you think that's doable from what you see of the conference thus far?
Well, it's, you know, if you look at the overall records, there's a lot of teams that are Illinois' record on down. I mean, Indiana's record's not very good. Iowa's record's not very good. Michigan's record's not very good. So if you can start to put those teams, you fill those up from the bottom up, you know, if you can be in that five, you know, four, five, six, four might be a little high, I don't know. But, you know, and go, and Lauren Tate here, our columnist here, figured out today, 11-7 plus one Big Ten tournament win gets you in the tournament. That
oh,
was his,
absolutely.
That was his prognosis.
Absolute given on that. Yeah. The question is,
did Lauren have to take his shoes and socks off to figure that one?
Yeah. Well, he is getting older. I think he just had his 78th birthday here recently.
Oh, so. Good for him. Give him my regards.
Yeah,
tonight.
We'll
please.
Do that.
Well, can we turn to football for a few minutes, or is that too painful a subject?
You want to go back to football?
You know, Brian, I think
to test your mettle, but before tonight.
Well, here's what I believe about our basketball program. We're gonna, you know, take some lumps as the freshmen grow and as the juniors continue to mentally muddle their way through their careers. But I think we're gonna be okay relative to this basketball program. I think Bruce is getting the right kind of players in here. We're on the road to being a power again. And it may not happen this year, but it will happen within the next couple of years, and I'm excited for that. I don't see what's on the horizon for our football program that gives me any pause for hope. And I don't know if there's anything out there that you see or have seen that would make me feel better about what's coming up in the next couple of years.
Well, a couple of things depend on, one, how the recruiting goes. I think, what are they up to? I don't follow this close, but is it 10 verbal commitments so far?
And I think give or take a couple.
Yeah,
you know.
I think, and I've had a few, and I don't know. I don't follow the recruiting angle that closely, so I'm not in tune with that as much as it probably should be. But
is 10 a net gain or loss from 30 days ago?
Yeah.
No, it's about a break even, I think.
It was about 8 or 9, I think, at the end of the year, and then they had a couple that decommitted, and then they gained 2 or 3 more.
Right.
And so,
well,
right.
Let's hope we stay above 10.
Yeah, and I think they'll get some more here, obviously, as they go. I'm also curious to see, and the Bears obviously kind of followed, looks like they're going to follow this same tack,
right.
Where they kept Lovey. They of course, let Ron Turner go today. And of course, they're making some changes. Harry Hiestand is gone and so forth, and looking maybe to change on the defensive side. I'm thinking that, you know, obviously the approach, and you guys have probably discussed this, is to let the coordinators maybe have a little more run their kind of offense, their kind of defense, as opposed to Coach Zook having more of a hand as to what is run. You know what I mean?
Have we effectively neutered the head coach, though?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think obviously you can have the overall say, but I was worried a little bit for his health this last year because he was working. I mean, you guys know this. Nobody works harder than he does. I mean, he was working 18-hour days, and a lot of them do. But, I mean, I just think, you know, maybe not having your hand in everything 24 hours a day, maybe that'll help him, and maybe that'll help the team. And you know what I mean? Let Petrino, he's obviously being paid a lot of money, you know, let him run his offense. And I don't know if you guys watched Arkansas the other day. Somebody compared the look and their style and their flow to the New York Giants, and I kind of watched the two, and it is kind of similar. The huddle, the kind of come up quick to the line of scrimmage, the way they lined up their attack. I don't know enough about, you know, how their offense is run to do that, but I kind of liked what I saw, and I think Petrino will be kind of a dynamic personality. I don't know much about the defensive coordinator, but I'm guessing that, you know, it was a decision probably by Ron Gunther to talk to Coach Zook and say, look, you know, we've done it this way. We've done it your way the last few years. Let's do it this way. And hopefully that'll work.
Brian, of these four categories, what would you allow Zook to do in terms of decision making? Fourth down play calls, fake kicks, going for two situationally, or the coin toss?
Oh, which one of those?
Which one of those four would you allow him to continue to do?
Well, he was good on the 4th and 1 at Ohio State, right?
Okay, well, that's one in five years. Okay.
Yeah, I know you're not a big fan of his.
Well, I'm not a big fan of incompetency, and it doesn't matter what I think of Ron Zook. All I'm looking for is somebody who's just minimally competent.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. I always say, and I don't know enough about X and O's to know the difference between who's a good coach and who's not a good coach. And there's a lot of opinion as to, you know, this guy would have made this decision. I think he should do that. All I know is the guy was the defensive coordinator in the NFL.
No,
so
well,
those guys don't get hired off the street. I mean, they must know something about football.
I don't think he was a DC in the NFL. I think he was a special teams coach in the NFL.
Well, he worked for Cowher, but he was the defensive coordinator in New Orleans for who's the guy that was Haslett?
Yeah, the blonde hair guy.
Yeah, So that he actually was at that level. So, I mean, that tells me pretty much he knows the game of football. I mean, I don't think you get to that level without knowing something.
You don't believe in the Peter principle?
Is it the Peter or the Paul? I can't remember which one is which.
It may be the Mary. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, all these guys have these charts on when to go for two in games.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no rhyme or reason to what he does.
Well, I want to make a point. Speaking of going for two, I thought watching the Northwestern game, speaking of terrifically exciting games, and
yes.
I'm assuming you saw that one.
I did hear most of it, yes.
When Northwestern scored and needed to go for two to tie it in the last couple minutes, Fitzgerald knew like 10, 15 minutes ago
what play
he was going to run, because he didn't hesitate. Not the fact to go, it was obvious they had to go to two, but he didn't hesitate. He had one timeout, and he didn't have to call that timeout, sent his team on there, they ran the play, they got the two. And I was thinking, how many coaches, including ours, would have called a timeout just to kind of gather the troops and gather their assistants and decide a play? And the fact is that they needed that timeout a minute or so later when they got the ball back, you know, to march down again. So he didn't have to waste it. And I thought it was
He was prepared. The only thing I would say about the fake field goal, I didn't have a problem with him going for two. By the way, if the little Wes Welker lookalike, Markshausen, would have thrown the ball across his body, across the field, you had three Northwestern players just standing there by himself.
Yeah, he did. I think he wasn't supposed to, like, wait a count of two or three.
Yeah,
and go.
I think the timing was off on
right,
the play.
Because Corey Wooten was out there supposed to be blocking, and a back beat him to the spot. He wasn't able to throw the block.
Right. And you're right. I think Persa, the one backup quarterback, was running left.
Yeah.
And he was all alone, too.
All alone. But, you know, I having played a fair amount of even flag football, I know what it's like in those situations, playoff situations, end-of-game situations. You know, playing quarterback, you can really lose your presence and not really think correctly under pressure circumstances.
Yeah, I like the way the guy thinks at Boise State. I don't know about you, but I just
was there a better prepared coach in college football in the bowl season?
Certainly the guy that seems to pull that stuff out at the right time.
Yeah, and that game last night was interesting also. It just seemed to be much faster and crisper.
The other thing I loved about watching Boise State, how quickly their defensive backs came up on those quick little screenplays that absolutely drive me wild and drive our defensive backs crazy too. Those guys were just up in their faces immediately.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's amazing to watch all these games. I was impressed with Navy. I don't know about you, but I know some people aren't fans of the triple option. But and we'll probably see some of that tonight with Georgia Tech. But I was impressed with the way they handled Missouri and the way they ran their offense too. We ought to go triple option, maybe.
I think you might lose Kurt on that one, though.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Let me ask you one last quick football question, Brian.
By the way, this may not be your last football question, Brian. But go ahead, Andrew.
Well, it seemed to me during the year, and I think a lot of fans that Shielhaus is, if not going to be handed the quarterback job, certainly given a leg up on Charest.
Why do you say that, Boss? I disagree with that.
Well, I just want to ask Brian, does Brian feel that way, or is it totally open competition going into the spring?
Well, I think with Petrino, it'll probably be open. Although, obviously, I mean, Charest, they really thought a lot of Shielhaus. I mean, he was recruited by, was it Oklahoma? And I mean, there was some people, big time people that wanted him. So I think, you know, he's obviously been given a chance. Obviously Charest just thrown into the fire last year. Actually, you know, towards the end of his experience held up pretty well. I mean, I thought, in a really no win situation for him. I mean, he was under a lot of pressure. And I think obviously if they're going to do a more pro style type set, I think that would favor, obviously, Charest. But Shielhaus, I would put nothing, I wouldn't be shocked at all, let me say that, if he were the, you know, wind up winning the job. But I think Charest has a leg up on him right now.
Does Charest remind you of his motion, a little bit of Philip Rivers?
Yeah, and it reminds me of a little bit of, Tim Tebow. I mean, just the way Tim Tebow throws the football. That little hitch he has, little thing that the NFL scouts don't like very much.
Yeah, but he still got it where he wanted to.
Oh, yeah. And I was impressed with the way he threw it. I mean, it looked kind of funky, but it got out there.
So you said that Zook's got to know something because he was a big-time NFL defensive coordinator, notwithstanding the fact that he may have been a horrible defensive coordinator. The fact that he attained that position is good enough in your book, and from terms of an evidentiary position, to think that he knows something about the position.
Either that or Hazlitt has no idea what he's doing.
Has anything, you've been up close and personal, Brian, the last 5 years. Does the guy know what he's doing?
Well, I think he does. Some people make better decisions in certain situations, I suppose. I mean, I don't think, you look at broadcasters, none of us are all the same. Some of us are better than others. It's all kind of subjective, and everybody's got an opinion on who's better than the other. It's probably the same with coaches. I mean, I think some guys are better at certain things and certain aspects of the game than others. But again, I've talked to him personally about football. He knows a lot about football and a lot about the game. And I don't, like I said, to me, if you're at that level in the NFL and you're working for Bill Cowher and you've done this, for how many years he's coached, I just don't think that the guy walked in off the street and decided. I think he knows something about football. So that's what I think.
Do you remember the movie Broadcast News with Albert Brooks? And William Hurt.
Yeah, we've kind of arrived there, haven't we, in some cases?
Yeah, but my feeling, about that particular movie was that Albert Brooks knew more about broadcasting than virtually any other broadcaster that was in the movie. And yet, when the camera got on him, he went into flop sweats.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't handle the bright lights. Maybe Zook is a guy who really does understand the game, and yet, when the bright lights are on him, he just freezes.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably for everyone to decide in the future. And if he, obviously he'll be under the gun next year. So
yeah, we'll see if he lets the coordinators coordinate a little more. Maybe it'll be good for his health. Let's get back to basketball for a couple last seconds here, Brian. Have you ever administered CPR to anybody?
Have I?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I thought you were going to have to Saturday when Bruce was getting a little frustrated there in the first half. I don't know if you noticed. You probably saw the pictures.
The pictures afterwards,
Looked like his head was going to explode.
If the chairs weren't attached to each other and the ground or whatever, I thought he was going to fall right back on his head.
That's the first time this year I've noticed, and it's a little different in the United Center because at home at the Assembly Hall, he's to my left.
Yeah,
and I tend to catch things that way because the court. But when he's off to my right, I don't see what he's doing when we're at the other end much, and the angle of it's a little bit different. So I didn't see what he was doing until after I saw the clips. But I have seen him before do the little a kid who's really mad sitting in the chair and has that really mad look on his face. And he was about as down as I have seen him really since 2 years ago after the game Saturday. Because I've done some interviews with coaches before where, they have the headset on, I have the headset on, and they just look straight down at the ground, basically, and they're just really down, and it's hard to interview coaches sometimes right after games because they've just spent all their emotions.
Yeah, you've got a tough deal there.
And that's why they make the big money. I mean, they make the big money to come out and explain what happened, and that's fine, but you always feel some human sympathy for them in the sense that, wow, the guy just burned all his energy up, and I experienced this with Coach Zook too, and then they're just so despondent after a loss that they can barely speak or look up at you. And that was the first time this year where he really looked down and felt down, and he expressed that after the game. But, he and I were talking about this last night on our show that, coaches like Coach Cady and Heathcote and, those old coaches in the Big Ten from, the 80s or whatever, that when not every game was on television or the 70s, they could get away with throwing their coats and, really stomping around and really throwing a fit. And you do that today. I mean, every game's on TV. It's on SportsCenter on an endless loop, and it doesn't help the image of you or your program to, be wild like that. So he expresses frustration, and that's kind of his way of doing it without, you know, but he doesn't get, I know he's real careful about not getting too, you know, cursing at the officials or anything like that, because that kind of stuff really, you know, the way things are on TV, the way internet is, I mean, stuff just spreads so fast that, you know, you got to be more careful, I think, than, you know, those guys years ago could throw their coats and stomp their feet and yell up and down and curse up and down the court, and nobody knew anything about it because the game wasn't on TV. Nobody heard anything about it.
Right. I just, you know, I we've seen him like that a couple times, not in a while, and he was really, really upset at, you know, with the team and also a few calls. And
well, and it, and it's funny because this was a crew that was from the West Coast Conference.
They were terrible.
Yeah, and I can always tell because, and we're going to have Big Ten officials out there next year when we play in Seattle. That was part of the agreement. But you can always tell when a crew, when I read the names of the officials and I don't recognize them. There's not a Wilmer, there's not a Burr, there's
right,
not a,
right.
You know, I go, uh-oh, and you can almost feel it as the game starts that the new officials, because Bruce is up, you know, as we know, he's talking a lot and he's yelling at his guys and he's coaching and so forth, and the, you can tell these new officials the other day were like looking at him like, what are you doing? You know, and it,
at least they didn't tee him up.
Yeah, they decide, they're trying to decipher, are you yelling at me or are you yelling at your team? And it was funny to watch the officials' looks on their faces. We're like, who are you and what are you doing?
Yeah,
and,
no,
and
I
eventually, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I thought they were terrible for both teams. But
well, yeah, and I obviously I think they missed, there were some things they missed. But, I mean, that's...
We didn't get jobbed, though. We did not get jobbed by the officials. That the, that's not the reason
no,
we lost
that
game.
No, that had nothing to do with the game, but you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, and plus, on some of those teams, what's happened in the past, not so much this year, is the way we would normally guard people in years past. If you got a crew from a different league or hadn't seen us before, then they tended to call a lot of fouls real quick because they weren't used to that pace of the, you know, the aggressive defense.
Well, Brian, it's been, the time has flown by. We're at the top of the hour. We got
what
go.
Time is the game tonight, Brian?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Sure. Did you have your pregame meal yet, or you're going for that now?
About to do it here shortly. So.
Okay. Great. Great. we'll be listening in, and, we're going to win these next two, get a little, on a little roll here. Guys will get some confidence as the tough part of the Big Ten schedule comes, and we'll hit that 11-6-20 win and, get to the Big Dance.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, and I certainly hope that Lani fans will hang in there with them, because this is a fun team to watch.
I had so much fun at the game the other night.
Yeah,
I really did.
And it's just a matter, like I said, if they can just get a little better in, at effort and defense, they've got the firepower, and I think those freshmen will keep getting better and better as we go, and I think by March this could be a pretty good team. The question is, will they be in a position to make some noise in the Big Ten tournament or in the NCAA tournament by that point, and that's what they've got to get through right now.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Brian, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you real soon.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys.
Okay, Brian, Happy New Year. That was Brian Barnhart, voice of the Illini.
Boz, we need to pay some bills. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
You find the car you want at Rizzo.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle, compare up to 5 vehicles at once, access new vehicle reviews, take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
Don't put off the things you should do today. Start a financial plan with AXA Advisors. AXA, financial protection. For more information, call Stephen King, financial consultant, 224-554-8053. That's 224-554-8053. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Chicago Athletic Club is the number one athletic club chain in Chicagoland, according to the Chicago Tribune. For membership info, visit their Lincoln Park, Lakeview, Evanston, or West Loop locations, or call Pat Cunningham at 773-529-2024. Tell him Oz and Mr. G sent you, and receive 1 month absolutely free. That's 773-529-2024. Chicago Athletic Clubs, another great Illini sports experience.
The award-winning Sun Tracker Swivel Beach Chair is the only folding beach chair that swivels a complete 360 degrees. So whether you're basking in the sun or just watching the kids, you'll never need to get up to adjust to the optimal position. It's lightweight and folds to only 6 inches wide, so it's perfect for the beach, tailgate parties, sporting events, and more. Anywhere you take a folding chair, you'll want to take the Sun Tracker. To learn more or to order yours today, visit suntracker.com or call 888-786-8725. Sun Tracker, the ultimate swivel beach chair, a proud sponsor of Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Check it out at suntracker.com.